Kind of like a superhero, you know.
Yeah, superhero Dave Hull from the Hubble Community Services District. Yeah, yeah, but let me explain the salamander logo on your chest, though.
Yeah, you like that, don't you? Yeah.
Super salamander, okay. Well, at least the grandbaby will know why. Grandpa just acts so weird sometimes.
Yeah.
This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about, well, I guess this is kind of picking on you a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll have a little bit of fun. Sphere of influence, what is it and how does it change? In context, that'll be interesting. Also, who determines when the roads are paved and how they're paved and to what extent they're paved and then maintaining roads, particularly as you're working with folks that are providing infrastructure, whether it's utilities, electrical, utilities, water, sewer, all that kind of stuff. So kind of behind the scenes or under the dirt stuff, in the mud with Dave Hull when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hull. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Albert Einstein. I didn't realize I was reading a book, or have read the book, Who Killed Patton?
Mm-hmm.
Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
And his collaborator. It was a nice historical presentation of Patton, a couple of questions about how he died. But they were talking about some of the Nazi stuff and Hitler and whatnot. That Einstein was one of those that got away. He was looking specifically to keep him in Germany, and Einstein got out.
He slipped
knowing
out.
Knowing that he was being looked for.
Yeah.
Yeah, with some Rocketeers and those guys also. All right, back to our quote. Any fool can make things bigger, more complex, and more violent. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction.
Ooh. Ooh.
Okay. That's enough of wing and eyeing. Oh, boy. I'm sure you're getting a lot of folks asking, okay, rain. Look at the backup. Look at the stormwater. I'm looking at that going, okay, are the systems working that you guys have been putting in over the last little bit? Because I'm sure it wasn't designed to get a 2.5 inches of rain in a 24-hour period as you're building out your capacities, because we don't get
Yeah. Well, honestly, they were. And they worked just
fine. The old ones?
Yeah. You're talking like sewer system and
the 40-year-old system or 50-year-old system you're replacing. Was that designed for those heavy rainfalls, or is that something that's now in the equation as you're replacing those?
One of the things that we spend a lot of time on is what we call INI in the sewer system. That's inflow and infiltration. And so that's when rain gets, you know, seeps in enough. If you've got cracks in the pipes or you've got leaky seams on manholes or things like this, you get water that adds to the flow of the sewer system. Inflow and infiltration.
Oh, infiltration. Okay.
And so we, all of us that maintain sewer systems, work on an INI program to try and minimize these leaks into the system. That said, the treatment plant and a lot of the systems are set up to handle big storm flows because we just know that the INI is something that just exists. It's just something, particularly in an area that we have here, which is a lot of rain, A, and B, we get all these seismic events that come through that keep things shook up enough.
What about the hills and valleys? I would think like at the bottom of Booner Hill, where it always kicks out and it's always floody, it's one of those spots, if you're unfamiliar with Eureka, that will flood or back up, and the leaves will catch in the drain, and then it goes out across.
Yep.
And you got cars coming 45 and hitting and hydroplaning, and all great, wonderful wintertime follies in Eureka.
There you go.
Those kinds of situations. Is that poor design, or is that just such a strong concentration of hill on both sides, collecting the water, regular stuff coming through, and the amount of rain all combining together, and you just can't build it out?
Basically, that's what it is. Yeah, it's just overwhelms the system, but it's been designed. Those road systems and the storm drain system have been designed to do the best they can with the geography that they're placed in. So like you're saying, at the bottom of a hill, if somebody's not keeping track of leaves and stuff, which all the agencies that take care of storm drain systems, you know, when it's a big rain, they're mobilized, they're out there keeping them cleaned out. But when they get behind, you end up with those puddles in the middle.
Yeah, it sounds like a dietary effect.
Yeah.
Do you have puddles in the middle? I may have seen an ad for one of those.
I think it's on your station here. Yeah.
So is it something that just is an acceptable risk when you're designing systems or replacing systems that you're going to have pockets, and that's what happens, and you just can't do a heck of a lot about it.
There's for any particular area and climate and this and that. There's some design threshold of it. We want it to handle X. But, in the rare instances when it goes, to the tail of the bell curve and we end up with more than X, then it floods. And so it becomes this maintenance sort of an issue to run out there and, like you said, keep the leaves done or put the signs up that say this intersection's flooded, that kind of stuff. Some of these things, remember, too, is some of these systems, the storm drain systems, are very old particularly in the Eureka area. And so some of those systems were not sized, properly, but the city and us and county and whatever, they do good at keeping up with them. They know where these deficiencies are. So,
jeez, is that behind the desk or out in the field?
Both. we know where they all are.
Yeah. If he's anticipating my cheap comments, this is going to not be quite as much fun for me. KINS, News and Information Times 319, will return with more from Dave Hall.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. Back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hall from the Humboldt Community Services District. Dave, the concept of this outside water getting into the system is intriguing to me. And I'm trying to wrap my head around, even if every joint had a loose connection and you got, a drop an hour. Okay, so undetected by you guys, not going to be caused to rip anything up, times however many joints there are in your network. That's enough?
Yes.
To screw things up?
Well, it's not screw things up, but it's factors that we have to consider when we're sizing treatment plants
could keeping track of our, overwhelm the system.
It could, and in fact, that's why... that's why we have the greater Eureka area treatment plant now instead of the little package plants we used to have all the way around the bay, because they would get overwhelmed on practically every other storm, and they'd overflow and you'd get raw sewage into the bay. So with the plant we have now, it's sized to handle, I don't have numbers quite off the top of my head, but about 4 million gallons a day is like the average flow into the treatment plant. But it can go as high as, 25, 27 million gallons a day for very short periods of time. But the plant's designed to handle that. So it has places for that water to go and then be brought back to the treatment.
So it's designed at about 20% of what its capacity is.
On
a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's kind of the other way around. It's designed to take this huge excess and it's designed around the average flow that we'd expect.
And this
but it also has this capacity for when these overages happen. But then it's brought back, it's treated, and it's discharged.
So this is just the sewer systems?
Yeah, this is just the sewer system
and water treatment plant.
That's right, in the wastewater treatment plant. And one of the things.
Sorry,
that, yeah,
PC
I know.
PC and me, we don't get along real well.
Yeah.
Water treatment plant.
Yeah,
okay.
Wastewater treatment plant. Yeah, that handles the sewage.
Not sewer water.
One thing that is important, kind of goes back to the last segment, is it's important to remember that the sewer system is separate from the storm water system. We don't do combined systems anymore. There's very few of them around anymore, and that's because you'd have to size the treatment plant for this huge amount of water that, you know, goes down the gutters and everything. That's why we spend a lot of time with, you know, public education kind of stuff about not, you know, throwing cigarette butts in the gutter and draining your oil in the street and all this kind of stuff, because the storm drain system doesn't get treated. It basically ultimately ends up in the bay. Untreated. So it's real important not to just throw things around willy-nilly kind of thing. The sewer system is, except for this INI issue we've been talking about, is essentially a closed system. So it's all taken from the businesses, the residences, those things. Whatever goes down the toilet, down the sink, tub, it ends up going to the wastewater treatment plant, being treated, and then discharged.
Not too many people have their gutters tied into their pipe to the street.
They shouldn't.
Okay.
In fact, it's prohibited.
Oh. Okay. So there may be some historical.
Yes.
But it's, how does the water flow increase by sixfold unless you've got those French drain pipes that have got holes in them or there's something goofy? I mean, I just can't see that the system could be that leaky and still be considered efficient. And that leaky, and you're not, well, you're still having hair, and all the roads not being torn up, trying to replace it.
All the time, yeah. Well, several pieces of answer to that. Remember, in our district alone, we have about 80 miles of sewer line out there, and we have about 6,000 or about 7,000 customers that tie into that. So you can see how many connections we have with all those 20-foot sections of pipe. All those customers that are tied into it, there's just all kinds of places for water to come in. In addition to a whole bunch of manholes that if you get into places that have the manholes close to one of those low spots we were talking and the storm drain doesn't work, that can backflow back into it. We used to have a big problem.
Words right.
Inflow? Wastewater?
No. Okay, yeah, the manhole covers are part of the wastewater system.
Yes.
But the street gutters and the drains are not.
That's correct. But the manholes, and so the manholes are set up so that they typically wouldn't get, you know, surface water into them, except maybe just a little bit of rain because of the little holes that are in there to keep the pressure right in the vents. But we had an example is down at King Salmon. You know, that when we, in these years past, when there's been a real high tide, real strong wind, it's blowing the tide a little higher and it's come over into the streets there. When it floods those streets, it'll flood into the manholes. Well, that contributes, you know, all of a sudden now it's looks like wastewater and we got to deal with it at the treatment plant. So those rare occasions are the times where you get these real high spikes of stuff like that. Now we have.
Well, that makes sense, or creeks.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's solid and it's just pouring into the system.
We've got ways to deal with that.
Time.
No, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. But we've got, you know, little devices that go in the manholes to keep that from happening now. And so we've done it in these low-lying areas that are prone to flooding. So there's these little tweaks all the time. And like you said, you know, we can't replace 80 miles of pipe all the time. So we're constantly upgrading sewer line as we go.
With the monitoring that you have to do, are you able to tell when you replace, say, 2 miles in a heavy area, can you see as you're monitoring the water that's going into the treatment plant the difference between last year and this year based on some of those improvements that you've done? Is it easy to say, and look, We've now cut this overflow by 4% because we replaced this 3-mile section.
No. Because every, and you know, typical, you know, sewer line replacement, a typical one is maybe 200 feet, 400 feet, something like that. So they're those short pieces. So even though we do several of those a year, it's not, it's really not all that noticeable. But we do have a, back to your bigger question, we do have a, like a priority list of areas that, that you know, need, that we either have identified it as having inflow infiltration problems or some other sewer related issue that we need to go in and replace the line. And so this is kind of a constantly, so constantly moving sort of a priority list that we go fix the worst ones first.
Not necessarily a fatigue issue, more of a failure issue.
You know, it's actually both. We Humboldt Community Service District, I'm real proud of the history that they have. They've been very proactive at doing more on the fatigue end of things. So it's you know, 40, 50 years old, and it's time to change out the stuff. That's but we always have, you always have a list of also kind of what we call trouble spots that are just issues that, you know, the land's sunk in, or maybe they weren't installed right, or they're old clay pipe that's just time to go kind of thing or something.
Yeah. Yeah. KINS. Whoa. We'll be back.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish-language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan 790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the general manager of the Humboldt Community Services District, Dave Hull. Dave, the sphere of influence, you used that phrase earlier in the show, and I'm kind of thinking, I think I'm still a fan of annexation, I think. And certainly we've got functional annexation with a bunch of different things, but a hard annexation for the city of Eureka, in a bunch of those areas. When you talk about the sphere of influence and some of the things that Eureka is dealing with, whether it's this Measure R thing or some of the other elements, if it has to be revenue neutral, how do things like infrastructure and maintenance programs and propose this and grants that factor into annexation? Yeah, we can do it and be neutral, or no, we can't because we just put in 2 years ago something that's got a 40-year life, and that means that you owe us 38 years. You know, I mean, some of those kinds of goofy things. How does that factor into the annexation discussion?
Well, in Humboldt Community Services District's kind of using that as an example, we just completed the environmental quality document and our municipal service review to, and have sent it over to the local agency formation commission, or LAFCO, to put the final, you know, say on a sphere of influence update for us. What, to back up just for a second, the sphere of influence, remember, is sort of the precursor to an annexation. So what it does is, through a municipal service review, you look at the district. In our case, you look at the district and you say, well, there's some of these areas that are outside of the district that may be places that we may annex someday and put into our boundary. And it can't just be willy-nilly. There's got to be some reasons for it. There's people, there's bad wells, there's whatever, again, from our example. And so you kind of collect all these through that municipal service review, and then go through a process and the CEQA document of looking at actually increasing our sphere. Then once it's in the sphere, if LAFCO approves that, once it's in the sphere, then the people that live in those areas can come in and start working on whether they actually want to be annexed or not. Now, the revenue neutral part of what you're talking about, in our case, let's use Freshwater Valley as an example. Back that was one of them that we did the last time back in the late 80s. We put that in the sphere, and then it became annexed out there. To get water service out there, that we had to have an assessment district that the residents had to buy into. So There's parcel assessments that go on to that to be a part of the system. There's connection fees, and there's a whole bunch of our regular stuff that goes on with that. But it's just part of the assessment that goes with that. Then once all that legal, paperworky stuff's done, then we extended the water line out there, and people started hooking up. But they have to all agree to that. So the sphere, so backing up from that, which is actually an annexation, backing up from that to the sphere, the areas that we're picking up is about a little over 9 square miles that we're looking at putting in, just in case this kind of comes up. Some more of them are out toward Indianola, which has been an area that's been of concern for a long time. A lot of wells out there that aren't very good, and there's water quality issues and stuff. Now, this is only water out that direction. That wouldn't be sewer at all. In fact, most of these areas in the sphere would only be water. The other big one is the McKay tract. It's right up against our district boundary now, and somewhere out there may be something that that comes up in the forest. So these areas are
like public showers and toilet facilities.
Yeah, maybe not showers.
Permanent.
Maybe not showers, but but there's also some potentials for subdivision stuff nearby the fountains.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where kind of where we are. But that's how it would work. Is once the people decide they want to be annexed, and then there's a process of setting up an assessment, so that they actually pay for the
improvements.
They pay
for
they just pay for the improvements before they get put in. They pay for the improvements, so that we have a revenue stream to pay over years. And it's like a 30-year sort of a thing. So they go on for a while, like a bond.
You've already got the project in. Let's see, like in the Myrtletown area.
Yes.
Cut through. Okay. Now annexation occurs. Project's done. So do you come back through and just tell, that's one of the costs of being annexed, is everybody in that area gets a surcharge?
Well, it likely wouldn't be like that, because if we wouldn't, we wouldn't expand our sphere or annex something. It'd be a rare occasion.
Not the district. I'm talking about the city expanding and annexing Myrtletown.
Oh.
Stepping on top of your pipes.
LAFCO is really the gatekeeper of these kind of things. That's what their role is to make the local agencies kind of work together in these planning sorts of things. So I doubt that they would do that unless the city and the district had already worked out a plan and approached LAFCO and said, we're together, like the fire district, in a sense. If there was some sort of a cooperative relationship where either we took over all the sewer or they took over all the whatever, that would be something that would be looked more favorably on.
And you don't have to worry about dispatch.
Yes, exactly.
Hopefully. KINS, News and Information Times 343. We'll be back with more from Dave Hull.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hull. Dave, some of the planning stuff that this drought has pointed out a woeful lack of in the state. Is Sacramento starting to get its act together a little bit? Are you hearing either about land use plans or water use or limiting growth in certain areas where there's no water?
Well, yes and no. There is a... It's funny you brought that up, because just today there was a press release came out that was an update to the California Water Plan. So the 2013 update to the California Water Plan. Now, the water plan is something that's been around since like the late 50s, and it gets updated periodically. So this 2013 update actually goes through a planning horizon of 2050. So it does take into account a number of different things as far as conservation, like you were talking about, new infrastructure, new storage, water use, you know, a bunch of different facets of this whole planning sorts of things. Not a lot on the population stuff that I've seen. You know, again, this has just come out and it's huge. But it's the document that the state will be looking at, the Department of Water Resources will be looking at for the next few decades.
As you blasted through it, did you see a lot of window dressing? Did you see fundamental things? Did you sense the heavy hand of lobbying? What did you get?
Probably all that. But honestly, it does have a lot of information. It's got a lot of kind of historic, historic information and planning information, as well as future looking information. Now, the only thing with something that's goes for till 2050 is it's looking in the context of the snapshot of right now and with a lot of crystal ball work, right? So a lot of this could change when if weather changes or who knows what. It could be population changes. There could be a lot of factors that influence things before the 2050 level, but it is something that the state's committed to doing periodically, and it is a good guideline.
So it was more confirmation that things are going in a general direction. Drought is something obviously that's on a lot of people's minds. Are we still in a drought here?
Well, it's always been debatable whether we ever were right here around Humboldt Bay. But yes, the state still considered a drought. The resolution that the state board did lasts until I believe next June, when it has an opportunity to be re-upped or not. Ruth Lake right now is about 70% full, so these storms have helped that. We've got lots of water here in our area, and so we're and picking up more all the time.
Yeah, hopefully, huh?
Yeah.
Did this
state, afternoon.
Yeah, no kidding. The state declaration of drought, did that impact the way you do biz?
Yes, because this state declaration actually had some mandates that affected all water agencies. So we're still living under those same water restrictions that we had before.
Oh, boy.
Yay.
Yeah. The excitement, it continues to continue. Thanks for coming by, Dave.
Thanks, Brian.
We've been talking shop with Dave Hall. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.